Hi everyone, welcome to the Eat Allergy Safe podcast. My name is Nina and I'm your host. Before we get going with today's episode, I just want to let you know about my allergy coaching program, and you're going to be hearing more about that at the very end, so make sure you stay tuned. If you'd like some more information, check out the show notes and go to eatallergysafe.com/coaching.
Welcome to the Eat Allergy Safe podcast, where it's all about solving the challenges of living with allergies so you can be more confident and stay allergy safe. Here's your host. She's an adrenaline pen carrying grown-up allergy kid, Nina Modak.
Hello and welcome to the Eat Allergy Safe podcast. Welcome if this is your first time listening in. I hope you enjoyed today's episode and make sure you check out all the backlog of episodes. Welcome to any returning listeners. So today I have on Allergy Mum, who for a different journey, she's coming to the end or a new chapter. She's also the founder of Allergy Matters Conference, and she's going to be telling me all about that later on in the episode. So welcome, Sarah. Thank you for joining me.
Hello. Nice to be here.
So first up, can you tell me a little bit about your allergy background? Like, where did your allergy journey start?
With my third baby. So he was born an allergic person. Multiple food allergies, so he was like the really highly allergic little baby and little boy. And then with my fourth child, she developed allergies as a teenager. So we've had two children without any allergies, and then we've had the third one from birth, and then the last one not starting until her teens. And also, I have to say that genetically speaking, we're quite lucky to only have two out of the four. Because obviously there's a lot of atopic history in my background and my husband's family. So we're all itchy, scratchy, wheezy people. We just didn't have the food allergies until William arrived.
Okay, and what allergies were you dealing with?
What, then or now?
Let's start with them. We can...
Okay, so... William was initially diagnosed at 18 months officially with egg, peanuts, and nearly all the environmental allergies. That was when he was about 18 months. But obviously he showed all the signs and symptoms before 3 months and had allergic reactions at 12 months and 13 months. As he got older, he got more allergies. And he also, the allergies he had, like environmental ones, especially to dog, shot up to being pretty severe to life-threatening by 7. Mm-hmm. So he got, after that, he became allergic to beans, to kiwi fruit, and other foods that are high histamine, which mm-hmm. is quite normal. You know, the usual raw tomatoes and not a Marmite eater. Mm-hmm. All those sort of things. And he outgrew some as he got older and then redeveloped them again, or they're permanently outgrown. So he's grown out of all but one of his tree nut allergies, and he had quite a few of them. Mm-hmm. He's kept now peanuts and beans, you know, haricot beans, baked beans. They are the same as peanut for him. Mm-hmm. And egg and all the environmental allergies. The dog's got more bearable, more normal, more livable. Mm-hmm. Which is really good, and I think that's about it, apart from the fruit and the oral allergy syndrome. So of course you've got the apples and the mango, the pineapple, tomatoes and stuff like that. But ironically, we look at the fruit allergies and we don't really see them as being much of a big deal, really, because they're so easily avoided, aren't they?
Yeah.
And his skin's obviously, once he hits 7, His skin got a lot better, because obviously the early years you're involved in the hideous routine of controlling the eczema, controlling his environment, just trying to make sure that the allergic reactions are pretty manageable. He has got a rare condition as well on top of that. He's got idiopathic angioedema, which we initially thought was another food allergy that we couldn't trace. We were finally diagnosed after about a year and visiting 3 major London hospitals for months. And they finally worked out that he has so many different types of antihistamine in his body. But he's decided just to have a little bit of mini war himself. So whenever he has a cold or a viral infection or he's particularly stressed, then he'll have facial swelling. And initially they said it wasn't life-threatening. It would burn out by the time he was 19 or 20. But it is life-threatening. He's had two bouts of anaphylaxis from that. Touch wood, it's got a bit. Hoping now he's 22, that's burnt out. But, you know, I think a lot of people do tend to get lip swelling and random things, and that's part of life, really. You know, we all sit scratching for something.
Yeah.
My arms come up every summer at the bottom, you know, of my arms, because I go to coffee shops and I have bare arms because it's summer, and then they spray that awful anti-vax spray and they put your arms down, and before you know it, you've got a strip of Rorex on your arms. Aww. And that's normal, isn't it, for us, really? Mm. But we look and think, oh, well, it's summer, it's happened again. So what we think is normal is different, I think, to other people.
Yeah. That's true. And then your daughter developed allergies as a teenager.
Yes.
And then how did that start?
Well, interestingly, when I look back, I do think there was a small element of denial in my head. It was quite forgivable, I think, dealing with the other one. But Emily had horrendous colic as a baby, really bad, like 11 hours screaming. But she had no eczema and nothing else, and it settled down, she grew out of it. And when she was about 8, she suddenly came up in small crops of eczema, and I thought, oh, she's just like me, a little bit eczema-y. And then she said, I hate the margarine in my sandwiches, Mum, it tastes disgusting. And so naturally, we just stopped putting butter on margarine and stuff. And she's never liked cereal. So I think it was sort of bubbling in the background, but we didn't recognise it as such as anything because of the way she described it. Because you didn't go and explain any allergy symptoms. For instance, William would say, oh, I want to stick my hand down my throat and scratch my throat, but, you know, or, you know, for any food that he'd actually eaten. So she showed none of that.
Mm.
But suddenly at 13, it initially became like an intolerant symptom. Now, I've got lots of food intolerances and IBS and things, but for her, she suddenly had lots of stomach issues with it. And it also coincided with lots more eczema and things like that. And reactions to shampoo. So I knew something was changing. But everything was just intolerant-based.
Mm.
So we went and got her referred because of William's history. And they agreed at that time, at 13, it was an intolerance. But also did skin prick tests for environmental allergies. And suddenly she'd got a whole armful of environmental allergies, particularly like William, high dust mite biting and tree pollen.
Hazy.
The only difference is that William's got the extra mold, so he's all year round. So Emily's okay in autumn. So that was okay. So we dealt with that. And then we sort of were advised to take Sawyer out as well, because we queried that. So we took Sawyer out. And then one day, she just started swelling up and getting huge puffy lips and wanting to scratch her throat. And, you know, her mouth was itchy and things like that. And her eyes are swelling. And I thought, this isn't intolerance. We've gone to IgE. So we went back, and they said, oh, it was a small skin prick test in milk. So she's still low.
Yeah.
But other things happened in terms of the oral allergy syndrome kicking in. And so last year, although it wasn't milk, so she's, what, 19 last summer, she'd already had a year at university, so she'd gone without EpiPens all this time, and auto-injectors. And then she had driving in the car and she was eating some fruit, and she went, oh, I've got really dizzy and my mouth's all swollen. And I just looked at her and thought, oh my god, yeah, here we go again, I've done this, I've been through this a few times. But I whacked with some antihistamine, and she said, no, I don't want to go to hospital, because, well, she's not lived with hospital visits like William's quite used to going, yes, we're going, so that's routine. And so we went to the GP eventually, and I got her prescribed with an emergency auto-injector. And so I'm now waiting to go back again to St Mary's. I think they want to trial her and baked milk. But for me, everything else has got to be controlled, because if we're going to have huge symptoms that are suddenly thrown up randomly when we're in the midst of a pollen season, then your milk reaction is going to be a lot bigger.
Mm.
So there's all those issues going on.
But yeah.
She's, ironically, even William finds eating out easier than she does because she's MILF. And so she finds it more difficult, even though she's very good at it, she finds it more difficult to make sure she's got milk-free stuff. You know, whereas William can go and out and he can have, I'm sure you go out and you have what I call clean food. I know
people's
version of what clean food is healthy, but for us, clean is, you can see it on a plate.
Yes, simple. Nothing.
Yeah. So for instance, William can go out and he can have steak and chips. Emily will have to doubly make sure no one puts butter on that steak.
Mm.
You know, so she finds that a little bit more tricky than, say, William, who is very happy with plain junk food anyway.
Yeah, and he's allergic to all the healthy stuff.
Exactly, and he doesn't like to cook, whereas Emily can cook. She's a really good cook. They all can cook. I've taught them all, but a good mum, they know what to do. He can't bear it.
Well, at least he knows he can feed himself if he absolutely has to, but if someone else will do it for him.
He's done that before. He's made other people cook for him, and certainly he gets his sister to do stuff like that. And occasionally he'll say, oh, I really fancy a donut, and she'll go and nip in the kitchen and make a vegan donut or a cake or something. So, yeah, she enjoys it. And he'll just sit there and wait for it to arrive.
That sounds like my brother sometimes.
Yeah.
So when you so you had your first child, your third child, sorry, of the of your four who had allergies, what was it like? Because, you know, he, as we discussed before, that we're around the same age, I'm around the same age as your children, so it was early 90s, mid 90s that he was diagnosed. What was it like for you, kind of that process of getting the diagnosis and then also figuring out how to manage it on the day to day?
The early days are just a question of getting someone to notice, because, well, my background is in early years, and I'm a nanny, and I've been a manager of deputy managers of very large settings and looked after children for years. So by the time I had my own kids, I carried on working. So and I also breastfed very big babies. You know, I got people asking me how much formula they had, if they were by health visitors, for instance, and they used to say, "Oh, how much are you giving him? Because he looks rather big," and I'd say nothing. You know. And ironically, when I had William, because he was such a slow weight gainer, I knew that he was feeding very well.
Mm.
His intake was good, his nappies were wet. And I was thinking, well, why isn't this little person getting rounder and longer?
Mm.
And he wasn't. He was just getting skinnier and scalier and dry and flaky. And I kept saying, there's something wrong, there was something wrong. And they said, no, he's just got a little bit of eczema. So I thought, okay, and I focused on the eczema and tried to control it, but without any allergy testing and even having any inkling that it was allergies, because, you know, in the 90s, you only ever heard of peanut allergy. You didn't know that anything else was an issue. And certainly it didn't cross my mind about the environmental issues, because he was about, 6-7 months. I went round to see my mother-in-law, and I put him in one of those bouncy chairs, and along came her big fluffy cat, and slowly in the air her hair drifted up and drifted on his arm, and instantly that hair lifted up, and underneath was a wheel with a huge hive. And I thought, well, I don't need to have a test for that, I know it's cat allergy. So that's when I started thinking there's something else. Still didn't think about food of an issue, because I didn't really wean them till 6 months on new solids. I was I think once you've got breastfeeding sorted out, it's lovely. You sit on the sofa, you don't really have to do much work. And you've got a hand free to grab the other two children. So my view was, you know, sit on the sofa, feed them, they'll be happy. It's basically quite lazy. So by the time we got to the 12 months was when he'd actually touched peanut butter. He's never even eaten it by that stage. He just touched it and had hives. And his eyes went funny. And ironically, my husband gave it to him. And I was going out to take the other two to school and nursery. And I came back to a very alien-looking baby. And I actually said to my husband, what have you done to him? Mum irritates his skin. He goes, well, what do you give them? And I said, just give him a bit of toast. So anyway, took him to the GP, and she said it was a very mild allergy, blah blah blah, because he hasn't got a throat problem, it's just a skin thing. So off we went, and I thought, okay, that's easy to avoid nuts and everything. We're not great nut eaters, so that's not a problem. You know, nothing else causes a problem. I never even dreamed anything else until one day I thought, well, he's underweight. You know, I'm still trying to get him a bit bigger. So I tried egg, and that was just horrendous. So that was I really should have called for an ambulance then, but, you know, I just didn't know what I was looking at. I had antihistamine in the house, so he had a bucket load of Pyriton. But doctors always say that kids always go through a bowel anaphylaxis to survive more often than not, I think, when they're young. And I always, they say that to you to reassure you, but you just think, oh, but it would have been nicer to have a backup in case it didn't. And when I went back to the GP, I said, oh, this is really bad. She referred me to a paediatrician. And the paediatrician looked at me. She sort of said, well, yes, they are moderate to severe symptoms. But of course, he's under 25 pounds, so I can't give you an EpiPen because it would give him terrible brain damage if you give it to him. but she gave me a leaflet for an EpiPen and then showed me the door. And then I just went home and thought, okay, what do I do now? And by this stage, you know, I'd given up going to see my health visitors because they hadn't really got a clue. They had acknowledged there was a problem in his sleep pattern or his feeding until with solids until I actually wrote a diary. So when I used to go in and say he doesn't sleep very well, people just think like every normal baby, they sleep for just 5 or 6 hours in 24. Well, William never did that. And I think that's a huge clue that there's something seriously wrong. A baby desperately tired trying to sleep because infants' growth is linked to the amount of sleep and food they get. And they have to sleep really well. And he never did. So we're talking about 2 separate hours a night and 20-minute catnaps during the day. So the first 4 hours he ever slept in his life, he was 9 months old, which was amazing. I kept prodding him to see if it was all right. It's quite normal. So I don't know. It just, once we got that letter from the paediatrician, I went back to my GP, who was fantastic. It took her 2 weeks to find St Mary's and find Gideon Lack to refer him to. And then we were told at that time we had a waiting time of between 8 months and 18 months.
Whoa.
Okay, we got a cancellation appointment at 8 months, so he was 18 months when he was seen. I breastfed him for 15 months, stopped feeding, his skin got magically better, which sounds wonderful, but he then caught every single infection going, so he had skin infections, chest infections, throat infections. So what you get better skin, you end up worse in the end, and you're taking a lot more antibiotics and treatments because you're underweight and something else is going wrong with your gut and everything else. So we finally got seen by the doctor at St Mary's, and they gave her the skin prick test. And as I left, the doctor handed me a leaflet on dust allergy, and he said to me, never vacuum in the house with him. Because he's 18 months old, and I thought, well, where am I going to put him? Where do you put a child when you're doing the housework? And I've got two other kids to look after. Where do I put all those? You know, so that was when I started really going for looking at all the allergy sites and doing some research and changing our house. And we melted our credit card down with removing the carpets, getting leather furniture, changing his bedroom, getting the dust mite covers, boiling his bedroom, having a HEPA vacuum cleaner. You know, we did everything we could to make his environment, you know, a lot better for him. We had a huge chest freezer because, bear in mind, we had three children, and by then I was expecting my surprise fourth. So they all had loads of teddies. And so every night I would just buy a teddy, and I used to say to them, if your teddy doesn't survive the freezer or the washing machine, I'm afraid you can't keep him. So every teddy was in the freezer, and literally there was a big black sack in there. Teddy's looking at me every time I open the freezer, and I wash them every other wash. But William was a real cheeky boy. He'd always jump on beds, and he never seemed to mind the instant hives. So I say to him, if you must jump on a bed, just jump on your own. Jump on your own, because that's got dust mite covers. He just looked at me. laughing, but he would always be the first child to crawl underneath a dusty area or climb up a tree, and they'd always come down in hives. And I thought, well, if he's not bothered, I'll just wipe him down and tell him to carry on, or stick him under the shower if he's particularly bad. Mm. So having that got me quite a little less sort of stressy, and I like to think that the plus points of that is that I was one of those naughty mums that you say, look, at the park, off you go, run and play, I'll sit on the bench and watch you, and if you break your leg, don't come running to me, because nothing like that, that will get fixed, we can fix it. Yeah, it puts things in proportion, doesn't it? It really does.
So, I mean, that's one of the things that I know a lot of new mums now get really, really stressed and anxious about, is worrying about their kids having reactions. And that, I mean, I find now there are more mums, at least from my experience of being a kid with allergies, like
my
like there are more mums now getting really stressed about,
still because mums and parents are not getting the proper support. Allergy clinics are so busy, they don't have time, you know, to sort of calm people down and then go, this is what anaphylaxis is, it's a cascade of reaction to anaphylaxis, and this is how it happens. It, you know, the myths persist that you're going to have a worse reaction each time, and you know, and that's not true, that's not. And you've really got to understand and recognise what anaphylaxis is and what it looks like and what you should be looking for. And that's life-saving information, because you have parents carrying auto-injectors who have no clue when they should be administering them, because they don't know what to look for. But what you can see is the hives and the swelling. Now, you know, hives, you should only really pay attention to them if they're really big, if they're bigger than 50 pieces and spreading quickly, because it's a sign of everything speeding up, you know. But really, hives, they're not too much to worry about, really, in the general scheme of thing. Even a little bit of facial swelling, I'm not too fussed about that either. I'm more interested in what's happening inside, because I know that's more important. But that takes a long time to grasp, and it needs experience of seeing anaphylaxis. And lots of parents don't see that very often until they reach their late sort of between sort of 7, 8, 9, 10 onwards and teen years. You don't really see that. So you've got all those early years where you haven't got that and you've not had that reassurance. But again, allergy doctors are in a really difficult position, because they get someone in, they give them a skin prick test, they tell them they've got allergic to something they've never even suspected, because you often go in and you think it's one thing, but you've come out with another. So your head's wheeling because you're thinking, okay, I've got this list and now I'm adding another one. Your head is too full and too busy at that point to then accept to sit down and then learn about anaphylaxis, because you're still reeling with, okay, all my management plans I've done now, I've got to change to cover this, this and this. And I think that burden is not really, really acknowledged totally by allergy doctors, purely because they've got their role and they haven't quite expanded it to help us, really.
Yeah, but I mean, what makes me think is, what's the difference between when your children were diagnosed and your experience of being a mum? And I guess thinking back on when I've asked my mum about her experience, because there was not that information or necessarily support back then as well, because
nothing's changed, unfortunately. I have to say, in the 20-odd years, I don't see much change in that area at all. In fact, I think in some ways it's got harder in some ways, because people are not. I initially got my EpiPens from the GP, but the year after that, my following appointment with the allergy clinic, they then were saying, have you got your EpiPens? You should have had them. You need them now after this reaction. But of course, because of the long waiting list between the hospital appointments, I still needed the GP to come in that gap and give me EpiPens. For my daughter, when we went to get her EpiPens, the GP said to me, has she had anaphylaxis? Because I cannot just prescribe one unless she's actually been had hospital-worthy anaphylaxis. So basically they're asking people to go through a life-threatening event before they can get the medicine to keep them alive, which is appalling. And this was a young, newly trained doctor. So I just think that's a huge step backwards. I really do. Some things haven't improved. The only thing I think that really has improved is food labelling and the restaurant law. And I think that's made a huge difference in terms of of what we can buy and giving us confidence in where we can go in, because we know our rights and we know what we should be asking for.
Mm.
Medically speaking, I don't think things have improved a great deal in that direction for anybody around the country and their experiences in trying to get diagnosis. It's still a fight. It's still an ongoing thing to have to go through these steps to get properly referred to the right people.
Yeah, it's true, and it takes a very long time. I'm just going through the process of getting new allergy testing after like over 20 years, because you weren't getting multiple allergy tests back in the 90s. You were just diagnosed and then you were that was that. So I decided I'll get new allergy testing, and I'm already, just to get the referral and an appointment at the allergy clinic, it was March, I had my first appointment at the GP, which took 2 weeks to wait for, and now my actual clinic or allergy first appointment is going to be the 4th of July. So that's a long wait for...
It is a long wait when you're living with total unknowns, especially if you think you've got a new allergy and you're not entirely sure what it is.
Yes, exactly.
It's incredibly stressful. Incredibly stressful.
Yeah.
And it's all right as an adult, I think, in some ways, because you do have the freedom to move away and look at a plate of food and think, you know what, I don't think I'll bother, I'll just get something else.
Mm.
But I think when you've got a growing child, the responsibilities are a bit heavier because you know they've got to thrive, and during those months they could be losing weight dramatically. But then again, the psychological effects of waiting for that length of time as an adult are more severe because you're more aware. Children aren't aware so much when they're very young because mums do it for them. But the burden on adults is particularly huge, I think, because they've never been helped properly in their early years and they're left to just deal with themselves. And I must admit, some of the teenagers and adults that I meet even now, they often say, yes, I'm peanut allergic or I'm this allergic, but I don't carry my pen anymore because I've never used it and I've needed it. So they've never had that history of a reaction. And then, bam, you'll get someone who has a sudden reaction. And that stress after that to go and get that sorted out is huge. And that could have been avoided with the proper medical care to start with.
Yeah, it's true. It's very true. So I wanted to ask you about... your daughter developed her allergy as a teenager, but your son had his since a kid. So how did you kind of prepare your children turning teenagers to manage their allergies?
Oh, that's a big question. I think it started very young. You don't start during teenage years. It's far too late. Not of parents do wait for outgrowing, and I sort of got the long list of allergies that William had. I sort of had an inkling that he wouldn't outgrow. He might be lucky. I used to dream of just having one or two allergies. Look how easy that would be. But so you have to start thinking about, okay, we can hope for the best, but we've got to prepare for like his reality. So you start very young. You start the mud show, picking up a packet and showing them what word nuts means or egg. You know, it's really basic stuff at the beginning. And recognising the food he's allergic to, because, you know, it's too late to wait for the teenager to say, oh, look, here's your pen, off you go. It's too late. It should be started at a very young age, and they should be encouraged to be, you know, to take on the independent steps when they're ready, when they're mentally ready to take them. My son used to carry at 7. He used to have the responsibility of the hook by the door, and his EpiPens and his other meds were all in one bag, and it was his responsibility, same as picking up his book bag for school, it was his responsibility to pick it up and carry it to and from school. And outside school he had it. Now I had a backup pan set in my pan bag, but I wanted to make sure that he didn't have to think about it too much and think about it as being a burden. It was just one of those things you had to do. Like we as adults do, we do keys, bag and EpiPens before you leave out. I wanted him to have that natural reflex to get it, so it's less of a burden for him. And that did help. That helped quite a lot, and he was very good at it. And he obviously in the beginning he heaped loads of praise on them. Well done, so glad you remember that. But also on the other hand, a couple of times we've driven around the corner, he's forgotten it. Now I may have a spare set in my bag, I turned my car around and we'd come home and go and get it, and so we were late for where we were going to get. So that again taught him that he needed to remember it. It seems a bit tough, but But really, you have to think long term. You have to think about when you are a teenager. If you're stricter now on your food labelling when they're young,
mm-hmm.
like May Contain, William has had reactions to foods with May Contain. So we're very cautious about labelling and what we eat.
Mm.
If I was slapdash about it, if I ignored them and thought, oh, they just slapped the May Contain on there to protect their own backs, then what's he going to be like when he's a teenager? He'd have completely ignored every label because, children do not have the full thinking skills until their brain's properly developed by the end of their 20s, the end of their teens.
Mm.
So all those things will help towards becoming more independent and taking it on yourself.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, it's not just, I guess those are allergy skills, but they're also life skills as well.
Because crossing the road, isn't it? It's like teaching your kid to cross the road.
Mm-hmm.
You teach them, and it's as simple as that, teaching them all the things they need to know for allergy stuff.
Mm. Exactly. And the time that, a parent crosses the road when it's a bit risky, I remember my mum, it was, there was strict instructions, you don't do this without me, and then she's holding my hand really tightly, and then we're running across the road.
Yeah.
But it was like, those are the very few and far between, and otherwise it was wait at the crossing, look both ways, and
mm-hmm. yeah, but that's risk management, isn't it? That's how I explain that, risk mm-hmm. management.
Yeah,
again, that's a very good point. You need to have these conversations with your children. So if William said he was too worried to go somewhere, and we would say, oh, well, why, and what exact aspect are you worried about? Mm-hmm. And he'd explain it, and I say, what should we do to get around that? How can we make that better? Mm-hmm. And so we went around that way. And if he decided he didn't want to eat the food there, that was fine. We'd find something he would enjoy because that's the level he was at that time.
Mm-hmm.
But once he got older, he was able to make a choice himself about what he wanted to do. Now, it sounds so simple, but really it isn't. You take forward steps and back steps depending mm-hmm. on your recent reaction. So if you've had a recent reaction, everything takes a back step. Everyone does. It's like, okay, we've got to change all our management plan, because things have gone drastically wrong. And you all need time to sort of calm down and feel better about it because, you've all been put in a paper bag and shaken and tipped out after anaphylaxis.
Exactly. Yeah, absolutely. So the next thing I want to ask you about, because we're going to be coming to the end of the time for our chat in a bit, but I want to ask you about the Allergy Matters conference that you're organising. So can you tell me, what it is and how it came about?
It came about because I went to the Food Allergy Bloggers Conference in America. It was in Las Vegas. And because it sort of came at the same time as our 25th wedding anniversary, we thought we'd go and do both.
Mm-hmm.
So it's 2014. So me and my husband went off there. My husband's not that interested in the bloggers place. He sat watching with his phone looking at football. But I ran around like a mad thing talking to all these people. I've been talking online for years and we've seen all the manufacturers, and I just thought, attending some of the lectures and even Jeff at the end said that some of them were really interesting, having doctors there talking to parents in a parent way. So it's not medical based.
Mm.
It'll all talk to you in terms that we would understand, being non-medical people. And then you'd have other people talking about all different areas, all connected to it, so at different levels. So you'd have people talking about teenagers, people talking about the psychological burden, all these experts and all these parents having panels and sharing information. And I just thought, why don't we have that? We don't have that here. We have other allergy shows, but they don't have that bond, that particular aim, because it's all highly commercial. So I have been thinking about it for years, and I mentioned it on Allergy Hour on Twitter. And so someone offered their mentioned that they had conference facilities at their where they were employed, and before you know it, I'd booked the hall, and things have gone on from there, really. So it's a not for profit. I've kept the cost down as low as I can. All my speakers are volunteers, and I was amazed. As soon as I asked them, they said yes, and to the point where I'd originally quite a few people, and I thought, well, I haven't got enough time in one day.
Mm.
To fit everybody in. So the current speakers I have are coming, and that's it really. So and I've never organised anything this big. I've done small events and lots of little things for the anaphylaxis campaign, but this is a big thing for me.
I'm really excited, and actually it's, well, I live in Manchester, so it's nearby to where I am.
So lovely. It's nowhere near me. Nowhere near me.
I mean, Runcorn.
I live in Hertfordshire, so going to Runcorn in Cheshire is like, okay, I'm going to have to load up the car with everything I need. Not the day before and trundle on down.
Yeah. Well, Runcorn's still a little bit away from Manchester city centre, but it's a similar area. So can you are you allowed to like tell us a little bit about the speakers that you've got coming?
Yes, I've got representatives from both the major allergy charities. Sometimes the allergy charities don't have time to actually say what they're doing in the background and the work they've done, and I wanted to give them the opportunity to do that. I've got Adrian Rogers, who's going to talk, who's a biomedical scientist, and he's going to talk about the allergy testing devices for mealtimes. I don't know whether you've ever seen them.
I've seen them advertised, but I've always been a bit sceptical.
That's just the point. He's going to have a nice long talk about the pros and cons of these things that are coming on the market and what the science is behind them and everything like that, which I think is really useful because, you know, we're going to get some people that are going to be tempted to use them and they have to know the cons definitely before they actually really rely on them. Mm. So that's going to be quite interesting. I've got Hazel Galland as well, and she is the food safety officer for the anaphylaxis campaign, but also runs her own business, Allergy Action, and she does lots of training. So she does training on for caterers, for schools, for all allergies, and also is a lifelong allergic person. So you talk about, 20 years ago being an allergic person. Well, you know, she's just a teeny bit older than me, so she... Born in the 60s, you know, no one ever heard of allergies. So her lifestyle and living that long with them has meant that lots of things have changed for her, and she's sort of like a long-term confident survivor of allergies.
Mm.
And I've also got Sister Emma Della from Cambridge University. She's the head of all the houses of the university. So she's actually used the generic EpiPens on the students, or her nurses have, and she has. And I'm going to get her to come along and talk about university life as well. I want some views from university students, and I want her to talk about why she ended up using those generic EpiPens, you know, mainly because the students were not carrying them at the time, even with a known allergy. So again, it's helpful for the young adults who might come along to my conference, also for parents to prepare their kids ready for university life. It's all very useful. And Dr. Keller is going to talk about eczema and skin and allergies, which is going to be very useful because, you know, when I had William, I went to a dermatologist and she told me that William's eczema was not related to his food allergies. And things obviously have changed better in that area now because people accept that and realise that. Although in some cases it's not.
Mm.
For some it is, definitely. So that's going to be a very, very interesting talk.
Yeah. Yeah, there's some really interesting research going on with, like, eczema, skin barriers and allergies.
Yeah, there is. But the other important thing, I think, for the conference, and I haven't carved out enough time as I wanted to because it's only one day, is the fact that we will get a chance to meet each other. And talking to other mums who either before or along sort of the allergy sort of road, it's really useful, and you don't feel quite so, you know, it is incredibly isolating at times. So the meeting, the social aspect is equally as important. If it's successful, then I would consider doing another one, but I have to get this one done first. So ideally I want one to go for a whole weekend, but one challenge at a time.
Indeed. Indeed. The same with allergies. One challenge at a time.
Exactly. Yes. 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 A few of those.
Oh, brilliant. Okay. So my last question is, can you give me your three top tips for new allergy parents?
Top tips for new allergy parents. I don't know. There's so many different in different areas, isn't there, really? I think it's knowing your rights, looking up the NICE guidelines and knowing that you need to get referred, because referral is the most important thing. Two, waiting for your appointment. If things are getting worse and worse, ring up your allergy clinic. Push them to be seen earlier. If you really think things are bad, let them know. Talk to the allergy nurses, and they will make notes and do the best they can. What's the third one? I don't know. For me, it was changing the house if you've got environmental allergies, and recognising the impact that it has on your food allergies, and really understanding what anaphylaxis is and what food allergies are and what a minor mild reaction is. And finally, just take a deep breath and relax and know that everything will be all right in the end.
Yeah, and it will get easier even though it doesn't feel like it.
You get different problems. Then it's the same as being a parent at all. You know, you stop sleeps nights for different problems as they get older.
yeah, like when are they, I don't know, I guess teenager problem is curfew.
Well, yeah, early teenager. For me now, they're all older teenagers. For me, it's please don't slam the door on the way home in the middle of the night. Yeah. I think the worst teenage problem was when William rang up and said, "Oh, I've been clubbing and I've left my EpiPens in the taxi." Thanks. It's a bank holiday weekend. That's a really big challenge. Thank you, son. Just get home. That's normal.
Yeah. Well, and lastly, where can people find Allergy Matters, and where can they book to come to the conference? And actually, when is the conference happening?
The conference on the 19th of October. Mm-hmm. And my website is theallergymatters.com. Now, it's on my blogging website because my son is an IT bloke and he designed the website for me. Mm-hmm. And it's cheaper for me to slide on a page for the conference on my website. So, yes. So, theallergymatters.com website.
Brilliant. And are you on social media so that people can connect with you?
Social media. The only thing I've really grasped really well is my Twitter. So, I'm at Sarah J. Chapman, and I love Twitter. I'm really addicted to Twitter. Really, really addicted to Twitter. So I follow all the allergy doctors on Twitter, and when they go to conferences, I'm really, really excited.
Brilliant.
Very sad.
No, it is exciting. It is exciting getting to meet all the people you talk to online and you connect with, and you're like, oh, I get to put a face to the words or the voice or the picture.
And it's learning something new. Like the other day, I learned that fenugreek was an issue for peanut allergic people, and I thought, well, it's... Have we ever tried that? Have we ever eaten that? Fenugreek, what is that?
Interesting.
If you didn't hear that before, have you not heard that one?
No, and I've had fenugreek before with no problem, because I'm half Indian, so it's used in some of the dishes, and I've never...
You're giving it nice and early, and it never had a chance to cause a problem, so
maybe,
you're lucky.
Maybe. I'll check, because I've... Pardon?
It was lovely hearing something new, and thinking, oh, okay, all right then, I'm learning something new. Mm. That's me.
The red peppercorns was a new one I heard recently.
Is it red or pink?
Oh, the pink one, yeah.
The pink ones linked to cashew, aren't they?
Something like that.
Yeah, it is. But then cashews are not quite totally a nut either. It's a very weird plant, very ugly.
It's a weird plant. Yeah. Well, thank you so much, Sarah, for sharing your journey and all the advice. And I'm excited for the conference.
Brilliant. You're very welcome. Thank you for having me here.
You have been listening to the Eat Allergy Safe podcast by Nina Modak. If you want to help other people with allergies discover this podcast, then please rate it in iTunes. It only takes a few seconds. Your rating could make the crucial difference in letting a fellow allergy sufferer find out that they're not alone and help is available. Thank you.
Do you feel anxious and overwhelmed by your food allergy? If so, keep listening, because I'm going to tell you about my allergy coaching program. Allergy coaching is about building your confidence and the confidence of your allergic child so that allergies don't negatively impact your life. From my own personal experience, I am a lifelong allergy sufferer. We discovered my peanut allergy at 9 months old when my mum, unbeknownst to her, fed me peanut butter. My mum was shocked out of her socks when my official diagnosis came. At 16, I was hospitalised because someone put ground peanuts in my food. After this, I was completely terrified of all food and that every time I ate, my throat would start closing. I had to redefine what it meant to take ownership of my allergy. I'm wondering, does anything of this sound familiar to you? I know, personally, that food allergies can turn your world upside down. That where you don't know where to start, you have to educate yourself, educate everyone around you, and then all the time keep your child safe. It just feels like too much. This is why I set up allergy coaching. It's about helping you bridge the gap from diagnosis to finding your feet again. We develop actionable strategies to conquer allergy anxiety and intentionally build confidence in your food allergy kid. As a grown-up allergy kid, I know that life doesn't need to be defined by our allergies. And I want to help you know it too. Through allergy coaching, you can give your child the foundation for life you dream for them. So go to eatallergysafe.com/coaching for more information and to get a free coaching session. That's eatallergysafe.com/coaching.